gonna get your booty grooving from conception to perfection. And the in between, imagine it. Lot of shit goes into getting one film made. You'll be amazed what people do when they don't even get paid. The stew is boiling over, sticking a spoon and stir with Ryan Matthew Tickler.
It's more than a dime.
Not an ass in movies, less baby.
Than a dollar.
Not an ass in movies, baby.
That's you right there.
Not an ass in movies, baby.
This makes Adam Sandler look good.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of 99 Cent Movies, brought to you by Hometown Hero Productions, a podcast dedicated to independent cinema, the making of independent cinema, in particular, a movie called Butcher the Bakers. My name is Ryan Matthew Ziegler. I am your host and an actor in the movie. And as always, I'm joined by writer, director, editor, co-producer, foot massager, beard in charge, Mr. Tyler Am.
Thank you very much. That was a wonderful intro.
Yeah. Try to make it longer and longer with every podcast.
Yeah, you're just trying to get me to rub your feet.
Oh, mention they made brownies yesterday.
Oh, and if, yeah, well, I was going to... Yeah.
No, that could be part of his title.
No, that's Joe Buckley. Mm. He's here, too.
Oh, hello, ladies.
Yeah, he actually has his own microphone at the beginning, so...
Hello, ladies. Hi. So, how you doing?
Yeah. We have a different... A new recording situation since the previous one, so now we can actually see our levels.
Yeah, well, it's...
As we speak.
So, okay,
it's not good
so
for old Joe
so
Buck.
The last one we aired, we recorded back in...
Right after the pickups.
August.
So, yeah.
So, it's been over 2 months.
Yeah, because here we are, October 25th.
Mm. Yeah, I want to say it was like the 20s. Yeah. It was like pickup weekend or whatever. So, yeah, it's been like 2 months.
Yeah.
And, so a lot has happened. We are out of the office. All the shit's now in my house.
Yeah.
Which is why we're in a different setup. And hopefully, hopefully the audio quality is just as good.
Yeah. That's why Joe doesn't have pants on. It's because we're.
Yeah. I want to maximize, like, the sound exposure type thing. I want to make sure my pants don't get in the way of the sound waves.
Sound waves. Why are your pants over your mouth?
Well, I just like the smell of the crotch area.
Why are they bright pink?
Oh. How all my pants are.
Yeah.
But we released the first trailer, and actually...
Yeah, that's the biggest news since the last podcast has been the release of the official Butcher the Bakers trailer. If you're listening to this and have not seen it, one, you are a fool. And second, I'm sorry for calling you a fool. Please go check out the trailer and then share it with everybody you know.
Oh, God. Anyways, I'm pulling it up. I want to see how many views we were at now.
Last I checked, we were a little over 17,000.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This just says 17K, but I saw that Devin's... Somebody related to Devin, said something about like how he shared it with like 14,000 people or something, some sort of like work group or something.
Yeah, so hopefully.
And so I was hoping to see. I noticed a small spike. We got a couple hundred views in the next hour or so.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, I want to say the last time I don't know how to actually see the real number, but
if you scroll down, actually, because that's the if you scroll down the initial release of the trailer, at least that's what I find. Or if you click, if you click on the video itself, and it opens up into a new little thing. Like, you know, the side.
Oh, 17,232 views.
So, yeah, that's a little more than yesterday. So,
and a couple hundred more because we really put it on YouTube, but we didn't really push that one.
Yeah,
that was more for the non-Facebook people.
Yeah, that's the one I've given that out to a couple people at work through work email and stuff like
but
that.
But it's done surprisingly well as far as, like, you know, I mean, our shit never gets very many views on YouTube, but it's 16... Thumbs up, zero dislikes.
That's awesome.
Which is great. Yeah,
yeah. Almost 400 views. So
it's never been like that before.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So either the fucking troll who fucking downvotes all of my my posts is out of here or what? But I'm really excited. This is good.
You had a downvote troll.
It just seemed like with both River City Panic and Grace's Room. Within hours, an hour or two, there would be like four or five dislikes, and it's like
that's dumb.
You know, I mean, it could just find the wrong person. Just like, what the fuck? Who thinks that they can show me this with my eyes? Like, I don't want to watch this shit, so they just dislike it.
But the thing about YouTube videos is whether it's a like or a dislike, it doesn't matter. It's any liking or disliking gets your video.
Yeah.
You know, higher. So I'd be like, shit, dislike it if you want, but just click somewhere, you know, or comment. So
yeah. I'd start like using like a bunch of like I'd start smoking in the video and say, kids, you should do this. I'd get 100 dislikes.
Joe, like this. Oh, it's like basically underneath your chin, like a caveman.
Yeah, like it's stuck in my neck beard, like hairs.
It's in the Flintstones thing. You just have a rock attached to the top of a stick, just resting underneath your fucking throat.
Yeah, the neck beard's rustling up against the microphone.
Yeah, it's not a corn dog, Joe.
Oh,
yeah, keep it in front of your mouth, not on the way.
Yeah,
in.
Stop trying to stick it in your stoma.
I like corn.
Stoma. That's a first. We reference a stoma on this podcast. Let's get into all kinds of medical terminology. Come on, ostomies.
But yeah, so since then, I mean, really, it's just been, we released the trailer, and then we just had like a Grace's Room screening over at Social Kitchen, which is where we filmed a few scenes, which is, you know, I mean, I think when I counted at its height, there was like 32 or 33 people.
Yeah, it was
who
a pretty
came
decent
for dinner.
Turnout, yeah.
A couple people left before we actually started the movie, because it was, the movie didn't start till 9:30 on a Sunday, you know, but I was surprised, and it got... A lot of parts got laughs that I didn't expect.
I know you watched it so many times, you've probably not realized it, but it's a good movie. I know you, because you're sitting there like, you're joking about it. But seriously, the movie, because you apologized for the movie after it was over. You're like, kind of, you said like, the next one will be much better. I'm like, no, this movie's solid. I stand by Grace's Room 100%. Yeah. It doesn't let up. It's bop, 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 bop. There's like, once things get going, once you get into the second act and they get to the house, things just keep moving forward, and I don't think anybody that's even halfway interested in watching the movie is going to ever feel boredom.
Yeah.
They may roll their eyes at a joke or two, but before they know it, there's on to the next bit, and it's on to the next bit. I you know, rewatching Grace's Room the other night, I hadn't watched it in a couple of months, but it's solid, man.
I laughed more than I thought I did. And really, because before, I would usually say, like, we took a hit technologically just with literal not aspect ratio. What the fuck am I thinking?
The lenses or?
I mean, it's just we're shooting in 1080.
Yeah.
It was a downgrade from the last film and Butcher the Bakers. You know, it's not the most beautifully shot film. It's nothing against our team or anything like that. It's just, there's a lot happening in Grace's Room.
And it suits the movie, though. I mean, you know, sometimes cinematography can go above and beyond the subject matter, can go a little higher brow than it should be sometimes. I think with Grace's Room, the cinematography is right where it should be. I think the movie looks great. I like a lot of the shots. I love the whole sequence with Billy running away from the house after the brutes attack and then going into the other house, that whole sequence. I think the cinematography suits the movie 100%.
And what I felt afterwards was, it felt more like the movies that I liked watching, like the ones you grab at the video store. You don't know what you're getting into, and it's like, this is not the best, but it's like, it's so funny because of how outlandish it is.
Yeah,
it works. It's like, whereas like, that's what I wanted to do with River City Panic, and I don't think I got that. I think it's funny for what it is, but it's not like the kind that you would expect to just grab and be like, oh, it could go either way.
Yeah.
And Grace's Room really felt like that. Like as you pointed out when we were watching, you're like, man, it just keeps hitting.
It doesn't let up. I mean, it really is like, boom, boom, boom. It's funny because even, I don't know if this was intentional, but with the Billy character referencing that, or if that was just part of the story, but she comes in and she's just about ready to say something, and then she goes, "What the?" And then you see the
floodlight. Yeah,
yeah. She's like, "What the fuck?" I mean, it really just doesn't stop. If it's somebody's in the woods, somebody's running from Wisconsin, there's fights. I mean, it's just, then the cult shows up and you fight the cult, and then right away Grace shows up, and then they're in the van, and there isn't a whole lot of just stopping and really talking. I'd say once. That bit where they're talking in the basement or in the
hair salon,
and they get a little exposition out.
Yeah.
From then on, it doesn't stop once. It just goes from beat to beat to joke to joke to joke. And I mean, it's, you know, like I said, I think the audience, I don't know how many people at Social Kitchen have seen the movie before, but it seemed to play really good, whether they've seen it before or it was brand new. Everybody seemed to be like, enthralled in it. Their attention the
whole
time.
It was definitely the right demographic. You know? I mean, it's like we're 20, 30-year-olds, you know, people who enjoyed this kind of stuff, catching it on TV when they were a kid, you know, watching it accidentally. Because I remember being semi-scarred by the movie The Tick. I think that's what it was called. But essentially, it was like a bunch of people out in the woods and like...
I think, just Tick. The Tick was that TV show with guy from Seinfeld.
Yeah, the
but
blue
this
guy.
Are you thinking,
well, no, I know what that is. I don't know if it's just Tick.
I think maybe it's just Tick. Is Clint Howard in it?
Possibly, yes.
Because that movie's also called Infested. And he screams that part, I'm infested! And he's got, like, shit grimming out of his face.
Because there was a character.
Yeah, title drop.
Amy Dolans, I believe, is in it. And what's his name from Fresh Prince?
What the fuck? Why does that say talk? Or Ticks. It's just called Ticks.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's I know that movie.
Yeah, and like I remember, oh yeah, there was a picture of him. God, he looks ridiculous. And yeah. There was a character named Tyler, and I caught it like right when he was like in the middle of a transformation or something like that. And like it fucking horrified me. Yeah. But it was like that's like it's so fun, and if people kind of get that feeling, oh, is that
Seth Green's in it. There's like actually a pretty solid cast. Amy Dolans is in it. Alfonso Ribeiro from Fresh Prince is in it.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember. It's a pretty solid little horror movie. Wow. Little, you know. Yeah.
But anyway, well, hopefully when Rachel Alec makes it big, then this will be that movie for her.
Yeah. It'll well, be like Piranha 2. James Cameron.
No. Mm. No. No. That no. Grace, don't compare Grace's Room to that piece of shit.
Well, I haven't seen it.
That's horrible.
Whenever I was a kid, I saw Dr. Giggles on TV, and that heart scene traumatized me.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, because like. I remember seeing things as a kid. I don't know. There was a movie I saw, and I've never been able to track it down to this day, so maybe it was a nightmare, but I remember a little boy sitting on his bed, and he's got, like, a stuffed teddy bear, and he pulls one of the little button eyes off it, and blood comes out of it. Mm. And I've never been able to find that movie.
I'm going
to
do a quick little Google search on this.
I thought it was a movie.
Somebody will message you with it.
Well, that'd be awesome. I thought it was a movie called The Pit, which just recently hit Blu-ray for the first time in forever, so I'd like to rewatch it. But I don't believe it was The Pit. I know it's not Dolls. I know it wasn't any of those killer doll movies. So it might have just been a nightmare I had as a kid, but I do have a very vivid memory of it.
Well, it could be a nightmare scene in the movie, which would make it out of context, and it would never be in the main part. Yeah. It would never be mentioned online.
Yeah. So that's something.
Is it called Still of the Night?
I don't know. I hope so.
Okay, let's see.
Because this will be like... Holy shit, that is it! That's it! Oh my god, I think. What year was this made?
I think it said, I'll go back, but I think it said 1982.
Yeah, because it would have to be, you know, it would have to be, 1982, if that's Roy.
Still of the Night. Parents Guide. IMDb.
A little girl. So it was a little girl. Yeah, 19. That would have been it. It was probably popped up on HBO or something.
There you go.
You found it. I have never been able to find that.
Yeah, Google's amazing.
Wow, that right there. So that was, I just relived an incredible moment from my childhood.
Oh, hey. Glenn Close?
I mean, it's a legit movie. It doesn't look like an exploitation weirdo movie or anything.
Roy Scheider.
But that scene freaked me out as a kid. It just freaked me out now looking at it.
Oh, wow. I've got like a weird one. I was like watching the Sci-Fi Channel like right before I had to go to school, so I only caught a tiny bit of a movie. But it was like a chick and maybe like her husband like, going into like this house of freaks, and there's like a clown that looks really sad. But I think the husband dies and like ends up in a coffin.
That usually happens with death.
Yeah. Well, no, they stick him in the coffin like real quick.
Yeah, that doesn't sound familiar to me, but but it's interesting.
Probably just a chapter of your own life, Joe.
Oh yeah. Whenever Dad likes to dress in the clown outfit, and he like makes a nice balloon animal, but with his dick.
Oh God.
There it is.
Yeah.
Anyways, well, I was back to the Grace's Room screening. I also, you know, not that I didn't just realize this is just more dick stroking, but like I through because we're gonna talk about post production, but getting all this stuff together for me to start editing the film, I just really realized like how consistent the plot flow is in this, as opposed to Grace's Room, where it's kind of like in the first act. There's a few scenes that I know people struggle to get through, which is usually like, you know, the character introductions people seem to enjoy. But then after that, once they pick up Diglett from the carnival, you know, when they're atop the hill having their conversation, which is supposed to be but character development. But it was, you know, a very early writer's way of doing it, which is just like, hey, well, let's have a scene of them hanging out talking, and they'll talk about fun stuff that people their age like to do and bullshit like that. But anyways, I realized that, like, there's just, we did a lot more show than tell in this. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that came from the fact that, you know, I'd written on my own a completely different script with the intent of going through revisions with Virginia, my co-writer. But then we quickly realized that, you know, there was a lot of disinterest in the project. Not that there's anything wrong with the script or the story, but that it just wasn't catering to the people who work very hard for free. And And so bringing a lot of other people on to kind of, well, what is something that you would like to work on? What is something that you would like to see? And, you know, you and Devin and Sean and Lisa all, like, helped us essentially build our first act with your characters and things like that. And then beyond that, we had a lot of input from Nick as far as, like, production design. So what's kind of an aesthetic we're going to go for a lot of these characters. And I think that that really kind of helped because it's like, you know, I think a big issue with, especially with Grace's Room probably, and, you know, I guess River City Panic, too, is that, like, there's a lot of ideas from, like, one area, from one person getting dumped into this fucking vat.
Yeah.
And it's, like, rather than, like, having to think about it and sift through it, it just kind of sits there. So there's a lot of maybe great things, and then there's a lot of really bad things, and there's, like, some stuff that's, like, it just needed more time to work through or gestate. But hearing ideas from you guys and, like, going through it and then, like, you know, saying, yay, no, well, what can we do differently? I think that really helped be more critical of the script than we've been before. And I think it was a great process, I thought. And so I think that because of that, it made a much stronger story, a much stronger plot and through line. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we don't necessarily have to rely on the incredibly tight action beats of Grace's Room, and we don't have to rely on the outright exposition of River City Panic. Yeah, we kind of found, like, a happy medium. Yeah. And so, and I'm sure I've said that, like, 100 times. It's like the in between. It's the in between. It's like all the good stuff there in the middle.
Yeah, that's the way it should be too. It's because you're growing. I mean, every movie that you make is going to be, you know, theoretically it's supposed to be, you know, better than the one before because you learn more.
Yeah.
You know, until you hit that point where you're a master of it, like a Spielberg or something, you know.
Yeah.
Where then I expect consistent quality of a higher level. You know, everything should be moving forward. I mean, even when you look at, like, a Tarantino or early day Brian De Palma, you know, their movies are all good from the first, but you see them getting better and better, and you see them getting a bigger handle on their craft and directing and storytelling with every film. So.
Yeah, it's like Hard Eight to, like, Boogie Nights to Magnolia.
Yeah, Paul Thomas Anderson terms, yeah.
Yeah.
And I love Hard Eight.
You know? Oh, yeah, it's really good. I do like it.
I like it more than Magnolia or,
no.
or There Will Be Blood. No. Or no, I shouldn't say There Will Be Blood. That's a masterpiece, but I don't like Punch Drunk Love. That's one I should say.
Mm. No, I like that one.
I've yet to see that one. Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces. I like the guy who does the score. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, it's a really nice score.
But he's great.
Well, no, I really like.
Isn't it just John O'Brien? Isn't that the guy who does?
I think it is John O'Brien.
He does all Paul Thomas Anderson stuff.
Well, no, I think. He worked with this chick for Magnolia for a lot of it.
Wasn't that his wife? The girl from Amy? What's her name? She was a pop star.
Yeah, John Bryan.
Yeah, John Bryan. I want to say he's married to the woman who did the song for Magnolia, Amy Mann.
Oh, Amy. Yeah.
She was in a voice. She was in a band called. Is it Till Voices?
Hmm.
Or something from the 80s?
Well, actually,
I know she did a song called Time Stand Still with Rush in the 80s, too, so.
Well, the very ending song from Heart 8 is Horror. It's her Christmas song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he had her, like, in mind, like, even way back then.
Yeah, well, I think they're all friends. I mean, I think through their projects, they became friends. And so, you know, I like, that's cool. That's a cool thing that directors do a lot of times is they get a bit of, you know, they a lot of times find the people that work with them so well. And they stick with him. Even big guys like Spielberg, he's had Michael Kahn editing every movie since, what, Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Hmm.
He's had the same editor, I mean, even in that respect. So.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'll probably do the same thing, but because people are willing to work for next to nothing.
Because the projects are good, and at some point, they will all pay off.
Yeah.
It will.
Well, in Butcher the Bakers is like, people, like you said, like I apologized for Grace's Room and things like that. And I've got to learn to stop doing that stuff. But I think what I'm trying to do internally is I know Butcher the Bakers is better. It's like, I don't want you to watch this and just be and write me or our projects off from now on.
You know, and I don't think they will.
I hope not.
I can't see anybody serious. The person, let's put it this way. The audience that would write off Grace's Room is not the audience. That audience isn't going to like Butcher the Bakers anyway.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? The things that they dislike about Grace's Room are going to be content. Most people that are watching the movie aren't worried about cinematography or structure, or they're not sitting there thinking, you know, there was a lot of exposition that scene. A lot of people don't even know what the hell exposition is.
Yeah.
Like, when I say exposition, I forget that most people aren't movie people and don't always, they're like, what are you talking
about?
Is that
an X-Men sequel?
Yeah. And so, you know, so a lot of the things that we pick apart and the stuff we do, whatever the project is, you're, you know, your average audience member isn't going to be quite as, you know, as critical as we are. So if they don't like Grace's Room, it's probably more content, which is what you wanted to do anyway. Yeah. Not so much, well, there was slow at first and more action beats. They're not thinking that way. So honestly, if they like Grace's Room, they're going to love Butcher the Bakers. If they didn't like Grace's Room, they're probably not going to like Butcher the Bakers either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's because it probably comes out, like I said, content. They did the jokes and the gore and the sloppiness, and they're probably not their cup of tea.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these movies, I think, are for a very specific kind of audience. I think anybody can enjoy them as long as they're somewhat cool and not, you know, expecting Sophie's Choice every time. But, you know, there's enough comedy, you know, so the people that don't really like the violence, they're still going to have a great time.
Yeah.
You know, somebody at work asked me the other day, who was it? Or maybe it was today, asked me about these movies and said, are they... Who was it? I can't. No. It was somebody. No, it was the Bonnie Klodnick. She's our assistant director in this play that I'm doing right now. She asked me, and she said, "Are they horror movies?" Because I don't really. I'm like, there's horror elements, but they're comedies.
Yeah.
I said, if you don't like horror, you will still like these movies.
Yeah.
I said, you know, if you don't like silly jokes, maybe you won't. But if you could still like the movie if you don't like horror. There is some gore in it. It's horror elements. There's fantastical elements because there's monsters or cult members. But yeah, these aren't kind of the kind of movies that you're going to be covering your eyes for or be disturbed by, you know, violent level.
Except for maybe the ending when Mike.
I don't even think that because
What
do you mean the ending? Ending?
Yeah,
the
I'm worried my mother will gasp and faint a little bit from
it. I don't know. I think
it's just the detail of a gunshot is pretty well done. Good job, Nick.
It's very well done. Yeah. So, but still, it's so quick. I think that may at most you'll jump and you won't have time to cover your eyes. It's over.
Well,
it's over as soon as it happens.
Mike asked for a cut that he could show his family.
Yeah,
it would off camera happen because he's like, I just don't think I can show my parents and my in-laws that.
More you do it, the more your family gets used to watching you be evil. Or I did a short film that you guys have seen, but for anyone listening, I did a short film a couple years ago where I played a very bad guy. Basically murders his girlfriend in cold blood in a fit of rage and then dismembers her.
Ooh.
And then he dies at the end. And so like my family watching that, at first, they were like horrified watching me do these horrible things, and then watch my character have to die at the end. But now, they'd be like, "Oh, that's cool." Either way, they're so desensitized now by seeing me play all these characters in plays or films or whatever that they're like, "Eh."
Oh yeah, my mother says if I say the cunt word, she'll disown me.
You say that like 3 times every time I see you.
Yeah, I'm like, "Hey, what's up, my cunts?"
Okay.
Yeah.
On that note, I'm gonna hit the bathroom real quick.
Okay. Yeah, no, my mother said that she really enjoyed seeing River City Panic in Grace's Room, except for there were a lot of F-bombs.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, is she? How does she feel about your performance in Butcher the Bakers?
She hasn't really seen anything about it, really. Like, she doesn't listen to the podcast, and I don't think she's seen too many of the promos.
But does she know that you're, like, a pretty much featured character?
Oh, yeah, she knows that. Yep.
Is she excited about that, or?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think you don't really have any swears.
I've got a couple, but no, that's nothing big. Like, yeah, not a lot.
I'm definitely not captivated by it.
Oh yeah, no, most people are extremely disgusted and turned off whenever they see me.
Yeah,
Joe wouldn't be able to kidnap anybody. It'd be way too much work and ambition.
Yeah.
Too hard. Way too hard.
I've got a lot of grease all over my fingers, so I think they'd be able to slime away.
I think Joe would be excited about the preparation. He'd be excited about going to Home Depot and buying knives and rope and duct tape. But then when it came down to actually like doing the deed of kidnapping somebody, and that's just too much work. I'll just play magic.
I'd probably just like sit there jerking off at my pile of knives. And I'll call it a day after that. It's fine. Just like a fantasy.
Anyways. And we're back.
Yeah. 99 Cent Movies will never stop.
No.
We'll always be 99 Cent Movies. No. You know, Butcher the Bakers may come out, and Oren Peli or one of these guys from Blumhouse will see it and be like, you know what? I'm going to give these kids a deal. You guys make some movies. But our podcast will still always be Joe being filthy. We'll never forget our roots.
Yeah.
That's good. It's good to know that I'm always wanted.
Yep.
As soon as money starts rolling in, I might ditch you, Joe.
you probably have to because I might say something awful.
I'm going to ship you off to Rikers.
Yeah, or we'll have to get whoever handles whoever handled Jason Mewes for Kevin Smith and kept him,
God.
You know, because he needed to keep Jay around because, you know, there was an audience now for him. But at the same time, he was a complete mess. So I'm sure Kevin Smith went through all kinds of trouble just...
Yeah, yeah. He had to have, like, a handler where he kept him on a leash and spanked his ass every couple minutes, like, if he was acting funny.
Well, isn't that the whole reason he did, was it Clerks 2 or Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back? One of the reasons he said if Jason Mewes got clean, his reward would be doing another movie. It may have been Clerks 2.
I believe that, yeah.
And so that was his reward to keep him straight. He's like, we'll do another movie. Maybe that'll be the case. If you can go a period of time... without being an awful person, maybe you'll get to be in another movie.
Joe Buck Boogaloo.
Yeah.
I could become an alcoholic.
No.
No.
No. Nobody will pick you up ever again.
No.
I'll just be drunk calling people for rides.
Yeah. But we don't want to understand because your phone sucks. I can't understand anything when you call me.
And I'd also be drunk. I'd be like, oh, I need to brew.
Yeah, that'd be exactly what it'd be.
Yeah.
Anyway, we let's talk a little bit about the editing of Butcher the Bakers, which you are balls deep in.
Yeah, well,
as we speak,
I'll be really balls deep as of Thursday evening because I took it was supposed to be a solid week off work, so then I would have the 2 weekends as well. But then the work thing got in the way, so I had to move some shit around, which is fucking frustrating as all hell. But it just, you know, kind of technically gives me more time because I could still work those evenings. So it's like right in the middle, I have to go to work for 2 days. But, you know, let's see. Today's October 25th.
Yep.
So the 27th through the 1st, or yeah, no, through the 31st, I'll be busting my ass. I got to work the 1st and 2nd of November. And then from the 3rd to the 7th, I'll be editing again.
Yeah.
And so I will get the bulk of the editing completed in that amount of time.
Yeah.
So really, when it comes to this kind of stuff, it's like, I fucking hate it when people sit on shit forever and ever and ever. I just don't get it. And like, unless it's something where it's like, you feel like you have to go back and shoot it. You need to get things. It's like, don't sit on it. It's like,
Yeah,
I could edit all of Butcher the Bakers in a solid 2 weeks if I had the time. So as of right now, I'd say I probably have 12% edited. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I spent, I can't even, you know, countless hours. So the first thing you do is when you get the audio and the video. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can just fucking dump it in there and find things and sync up the audio and the video like I did with Grace's Room, which was a bad idea.
Yeah.
It was just like nothing was labeled. It was just like, okay, these video files look like they're from this scene.
Oh,
and then you just it was just like, okay, it's the exposition scene, you know, whatever. And then you go through and you try and find everything, and that was stupid. But with Butcher the Bakers, I was much smarter about it. So as soon as I got all the video and audio files, what I did was I created separate folders by scene numbers or, like, you know, chunks of the film that I would put together. So scenes, it would be labeled, I don't know if it says scene at the beginning or if it's just like 20 through 23. I'd give it a name. So like the Riverfront Fight. And then I would go through and I would, because Jerry's great. Jerry labels all of his audio files by the by the script notes, and I'm sure you can do it with the video files, but I'm sure it's fucking annoying as all hell. Because Jerry's got he's basically got a supercomputer strapped to his belly.
Yeah.
when he's doing all that audio stuff. But I'm sure you could do it with the video files as well, but it would just be too intensive. So I'd go through and I'd watch the clips, both Cam A, Cam B, and relabel them based on what they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having the script supervisor notes and having Jerry's audio files, so as the master of what everything's going to be labeled, it was a lot easier than I expected it to be. So I spent, you know, maybe 2 weeks, after work, just going through relabeling all this stuff right after filming. And then after I get all my files together, then I would, you know, start a new project file in Adobe Premiere.
Okay.
And I would pull all that shit up, and I would start building sequences. And so first thing I do is, you know, scene 1 through 7, which is the opening of the film. Those are the actual numbers. I would get all the audio or the video files, drop it in. Then I would overlay Cam A and Cam B so that they're synced up on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And I can cycle between the two different shots of the same thing that's happening, because it's the same.
Yep.
the same take. Yeah. It's just two different angles of the camera.
Yeah, because every scene was shot with two cameras,
yeah.
at the same time.
So. Yeah, for the most part, there was always two cameras rolling. And so then what I would do is after I'd get all those put together, then I would go through and I would start from the beginning of the scene. So it's like usually it's like you're Joe, are you okay? What the fuck was that?
I was yawning, but I didn't want to yawn into the mic.
Oh, I thought you were having a stroke.
No.
he just,
it's really a matter
he just
of time.
Turned to the left and his head sagged into his shoulder and it like fucking melted.
No. I just wanted to yawn and not put it into the mic.
You do realize there is going to come a time where Joe has some sort of major health issue. And
oh my God.
We'll be probably around some, you'll be around him.
It'll be the first time he gets his license, he's driving us all somewhere, and he just goes down.
die in the
My eyeball will fall out.
Yeah. With what you eat, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But so once all the video files are put together by the kind of like the takes, so there'll be three takes of something. I'll conglomerate all those together. Then I'll sync up the audio with them all. And then I'll label all the different, I don't know what you call them, the different sequences within a scene. Mm-hmm. So that way it's like, so there's like the waterfront fight that I mentioned. There's a fight that goes on between, our two lead guys and our two lead females, three lead guys, cause Joe's there too. And they're having two separate fights, but near each other. And so mm-hmm. it's like, it's they're getting attacked by the same group, but we keep bouncing back and forth. And so I would just put like, okay, here's the chunk with the girls. They're pulling into the shot and all this stuff. Then the guys arrive. Mm-hmm. Well, then the first bad guy attacks the girls. Then the guys get attacked. And so mm-hmm. you go back and forth. So that way I have it in order of what I'm looking for. And then you label all that. At the tail end of the sequence, I would add the B-roll shots, so anything, establishing, anything like that, and then any wild lines after that. Mm-hmm. So it's all nice and labeled and color-coded. I can just click and find what I need. It was fantastic. Yeah. I'm so glad that, I learned from my mistake.
Yeah, that's
Otherwise,
awesome.
It's just, it makes it hell. Like, the cleaner you make it at the beginning, the easier it is to go through at the end.
Yeah.
And so then, once that's done, I'll make a separate sequence. I'll duplicate that sequence and make one specifically for my edit. That way I always have that old sequence in case I accidentally delete shit. I can go back and find it.
Yeah.
And so I've done probably, I couldn't tell you how many, I'll pull it up. How many scenes, I'm looking it up right now, or scene chunks. 30 minus 2, so 28. We have 28 scene chunks. Mm-hmm. I've probably done 6 or 7. So I've done a fair amount. Some smaller ones, and then I did what was the equivalent of our biggest as far as footage. It was like 5.5 hours worth of footage.
Yeah, wow.
And I mean that goes because of the two cameras, so you're kind of doubling some things.
Yeah.
But I put the sequence all together and it was 5.5 fucking hours. It was insane.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to be like a 3-minute scene in the movie.
A what?
A 3-minute scene in
the movie. Yeah. I thought you said 30-minute.
No.
It's like what?
Yes. It's a very short scene. It's the same one I'm talking about, that fight scene.
Yeah.
Where it's all this crazy fucking shit happening and it amounts to, next to nothing. The ratio of what gets cut is insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
So so I've done about 6 or 7 scenes right now, and the biggest thing has just been kind of the trailer. The trailer took a lot of time.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
very proud of it.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I would say that I'm not the best at trailers, but I think I'm getting better.
Yeah.
I feel like it has a very clear outline. It makes sense, and it gives a taste of everything. It gives some stuff away, but you wouldn't even know it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's out of context and whatever. And so right now, I'll have a rough edit completed within 2 weeks of today.
Yeah, because as of right now, we are scheduled to watch a rough cut on Election Day.
Yeah.
November 8th.
I have November 6th. I'll have the board here, the Hometown Hero board, to look through whatever I have done. And then on the 8th, I'll have the post-production people and a couple extra eyes of people that I trust with notes. Mm-hmm. Because one of my biggest pet peeves is people, you invite people over to come, get some input and like, oh, that's good. And it's like, no, I need to know. It's
that was cool, man.
You're not going to hurt my feelings. I may get frustrated because one of the biggest things that I struggle with is people who they can't accept they can't accept a cut of something, despite the fact that that's the best it can be, you know. And it's a lot of times it's like people who are like, you know, hindsight, well, we should have done this, or
If you don't have the footage, I mean,
Diglett needed more mustard on them on the car.
Shut up, Joe.
What?
That's a. So I don't know if he's listening to this, but we did, I did like a with Grace's room, I screened the rough cut with internally. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, I was really unsure of Grace's room at the time. And so I was like, we'll put a thing out online. People can fill out a survey and they can we'll select 10 people to come watch it. Like people who have nothing to do with the production. Well, and some people who were involved, like on a very base level, came to. Dan Cherney, who plays the pastor in all three films, he came, and after we watched the film, I walked through, and his suggestion was that when at the conversation at the top of the hill, when Amber's on top of the van, she's eating a corn dog.
Yeah.
He thought it'd be funny if every time she hit him, there was more ketchup and mustard on his face. It's just like...
It's such an arbitrary but you can't really do anything about it because you already shot.
Yeah.
So it's so.
And I don't even think he was thinking like, oh, digitally edit it. I think he was like literally thinking like we go back and do that. Like that's. Oh, and this was in December. It's like, it was like November or December. It's like, that's not going
to
happen.
LA and Boston just to shoot and make it summer all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That's funny though.
I get really frustrated with people who. It's not productive to me.
No.
It really isn't, because I have to go through and explain, well, this is why this is cut like this, because, you know, just before we cut to this shot, Joe's pants are off for some reason. Yeah. I can't cut to him earlier. It's impossible.
Yeah,
there's nothing to do.
And so
I've gotten better of knowing who those people are, and so I try to avoid them. You know, I mean, it's no offense. It's not productive to me. So when I sit here for like 2 weeks straight and I hammer this fucking thing out, it's not like I'm looking to get like praise. What I'm looking for is things that like I'm not even going to notice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you know, that's important. It's basically the same concept as you do for a studio movie, but instead of the previews, you know, being a random audience pulled from the street, it's people
in the mall.
But yeah, it's people that, you know, but it's still the same concept. So let's get some eyes on it and see things that you may not see because you've been staring at it for so long.
So I'll just keep referencing that scene, the fight scene. One of the things that I sent it to a bunch of people to look at just because I was really excited about it, because it really showcased the practical effects and even the acting and the jokes.
I loved watching it.
It's great.
I watched like 80 times.
And the one thing that people, I would say maybe a third of them said, is that I'm trying to think of it from a cast or crew member position. It moves quickly. There's a lot happening. And so I had to think about, well, how do I answer that? Because how do I feel? Because I spent the most time with it. Mm-hmm. And my conclusion for most of them, there's a few things I did adjust. But for most of it, it was just like, well, you need to understand is that they're going to have a lot of context before they see this clip.
Yeah.
They're not just going to be introduced. All the characters that are in this scene have been already introduced. Mm-hmm. So they know who they are. They know what they're capable of. They know what they're doing and what their motivations are. So you don't have to worry about that. And don't worry about, like, you don't need to have everything established layout-wise for the scene immediately, because it gets explained throughout.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why, like, there was one shot that I had to fight for on set. Not because anybody was saying, like I don't see it. It was just because we were running out of fucking time. Mm-hmm. And it was the moment where one of the girls gets punched and she falls back. And as the camera's panning, we see you guys in the background. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I need that, because I need to know. I need that's my idiot's shot for the audience.
Yeah,
to not say that they're idiots, but like, I'm afraid that they need to see a physical shot with you guys in it together to know that you're in the same area.
Yeah, and plus it sets up a spatial for the audience to kind of know the layout of the land of the set. So how far their fight is from us, where we are, and then. So you kind of get a layout of the battlegrounds, if you will.
Yes, exactly.
And that helps establish that a lot, seeing how far away we are in comparison to the girls and how the fight's going. So.
Yeah. And then, you know, as far as the pacing of it, it's like it needs to be quicker than most of it, because it's definitely, I would say, it's our most action-packed So the ending is full of action of the movie, mm-hmm. but that the ending's probably going to be like 12 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big climax. It's a big piece. And there's a lot happening in a lot of different areas. But we have more time to explain it because there's a lot more tonally happening. Mm-hmm. This is just a straight up fight sequence. And so after I got all this feedback, I went and I watched a couple scenes from other movies, which I would highly suggest to editors who aren't sure what to do.
Oh, yeah.
So I pulled up the Battle of Hoth from Star Wars.
Okay.
I mean, there was no rhyme or reason for picking these scenes. I tried to get a bunch of stuff. I pulled up the Rob Zombie Michael Myers remake mm-hmm. because I remember when they're in the house at the end, when it's like kind of like the showdown, there's the girl, and there might be one more kid left or something like that. Anyways, pulled that up, and I pulled up Jason Bourne. And whatever. And I looked at all these things. I'm like, well, what am I looking for here? And it's like, no matter what, it was like, it needs to be quick. I knew that. And like Jason Bourne, that shit is like fucking hyperspeed.
Yeah, yeah.
The camera's moving like crazy. And so it's like, if there's ever a shot in that sequence that I just edited, if the camera was moving quickly or in a strange way, I would reanalyze that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's still and it's focused, I'm going to rely on the audience to be able to know what they should be looking for.
Yeah.
And so I went through and I adjusted a few things where there's like some pans and things like that. And I think I got a better cut out of it. And so it was like, I tried to be as like compromising to those people without losing what I thought was the impact of that scene. So anyways, I don't know. I can't remember how I got on that tangent, but that's kind of part of how I do my process. And it's just like, you can't be afraid to you need to be able to listen to people
mm-hmm.
and while at the same time being able to fight for what you think is right.
Well, yeah, ultimately you're the director and your vision and your name will always be attached to it as the director.
Yes.
So at the end of the day, you have to be happy with the cut and having your name on it, you know.
Yes.
So at the end of the day, it's your vision. So, that's important.
I've bitched about this before, but when we did River City Panic, the director of photography, who I had a somewhat tenuous relationship after filming with, I needed somebody to color correct it, and he did a great job. He mm-hmm. color corrected the shit out of that movie, and it looks fucking beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'll give him credit for that. But in the process of color correcting, in the process of my edit, I continued to share it with him, and he sent me note after note after note after note. And I went through all of his notes, and most of them I did not want to do because they were creative. I felt they were creative. They were not constructive to it felt like he was trying to tell me that this is the cut. This is what the cut should be of the film.
I see what you're saying.
And I did not appreciate that. But, you know, I mean, it's not like I try not to get offended. I emailed him back because he sent me like a beat by beat. It was like it was fucking humongous. And he was trying
to direct the movie through that way.
Oh,
I mean,
and
that's directing. So, yeah.
And so I responded to that and I said, well, these are the things I will do. These are the things that I'll play with. And these are the things I'm just not going to do.
Yeah.
Just so you know. And like, I appreciate the feedback. Doesn't mean don't continue to give it to me. And he said, oh, that's great. I totally respect that. Sent him the video footage to color correct it. He fucking re-edited it.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is so fucked up.
I'm still like...
The balls. You know what I mean?
Oh, seriously. And well, the whole...
And not in a good way. Not like having big balls as in your... The nerve, I should say. The nerve of that.
Yeah.
To when you... When first of all, you're the DP, you're not the editor, nor are you the director. No matter what you
or
do.
Or the writer.
Yeah, exactly.
And he didn't fucking pay for the fucking thing.
No.
And he got paid to DP and color correct it.
Yeah. And for you to decide, oh, okay, here I'm being sent this material to color correct, but I'm going to do him a favor and fix, quote in quotation marks, fix his edit because he doesn't know what he's doing.
Well,
the language he used
in that initial email was a lot of like, it is a, what the fuck was it? Like, there was one thing where it's like you do not do that. It's something like against the audience, like and it, like all this, like what felt like to me like school language. Like, did a teacher tell you you have to do something a certain way, and you just took their word for it? But anyways, what I learned from that experience is that even though I like to give as much as I can, I like to be understanding. At the end of the day, the reason why these films are going to be unique is because of the original creative vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the only two people who really should understand that are probably the writers,
mm-hmm.
you know, assuming that, you know,
I as a writer, I got to go on to direct and then edit it. Mm-hmm. So I really have control over that.
Oh, yeah.
And it shouldn't be anybody else. Because it's, and it's not to take away the – Butcher the Bakers is the best example of our team coming together and making something. The performances really shine. The technical stuff really came through. And it was because we were willing to work with each other. Whereas the other films, we had issues with that.
Yeah.
In various areas and departments. And Butcher the Bakers – I have been so much better about taking in criticism and accepting it, and then also saying why I will not do that. Mm-hmm. And usually, I don't think with this team, I've never run into any issues where I defend the way I feel about a shot or a cut or something, and people are like, oh, all right, good. And as a result of that, people have begun to understand what it should look like, or like what it looks like in with that vision in mind. And it's like, oh my God, it's like you feel like an asshole, but at the end of the day, you're just trying to – what you're doing is you're letting people in as opposed to like keeping them at arm's length. Like, no.
Yeah.
You know? And so like I don't know, there's probably some weird Joe in the sky I should be thanking.
Oh,
but
that's
like,
nightmarish.
This has been the single best experience, creative experience of my life.
Well, mine too so far. It's just been –
And it, know, and I think it's
especially
the,
involving movies, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it's the culmination of, you know, it's not that like the bad people got weeded out. I don't think it's that. I think it's more like this was the movie I was ready to make, and this is the one that was that you and Sean. It was finally your moment to shine as a team.
Yeah, because I mean, like I said, Sean and I again been doing things together for years, but the idea of doing a film together. And having the kind of creative freedom that you gave us, you know, to improvise and, you know, and to be there on the ground floor, you know, in the development of this movie and every step of the way. I can't speak for him, but I mean, for me, it's fun because it's the kind of stuff we always talked about. We did so many plays together and we've done so many little things. And like he directed a 5-minute play that I wrote for him at Northern. So we've always had these little collaborations. But this was like a culmination, it felt like.
Yeah.
All of our collaborations after so many years. Now we're both leading the same kind of silly-ass movie that we watched at his house, time without number, you know.
Yeah.
And so, it was so much fun, you know, just on that level. It's like, well, Sean and Ryan together, you know, goof-assing in a movie, you know. So.
Yeah. I really feel like everybody came to their own. And we gave Joe a platform.
Oh, absolutely.
To be weird and goofy.
And it's so
within,
good.
Within a certain degree.
Yeah, I mean, you can't give... You
and
know,
he even snuck in a full buck moment towards the end when he's coming back from the woods with Sean and he says that line. I laugh every time.
It's hilarious
and
it's awfully filthy.
And his delivery is fantastic, you know. And well, like with this, I would say so in editing River City Panic, I avoided that movie until December. So all these movies are shot in the summer. I didn't touch River City Panic until pretty much December, the beginning of December.
Wow.
Because it was such a bad experience. Not bad experience. It was such a rough experience, learning experience. And then also, like, I didn't understand how to edit with 7 audio files, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, anytime I tried to cut stuff, you know, J&L cut stuff together, it was just, like, grading, and I just did not understand. I mean, I learned a lot through that, and I think that it came together fairly well for what it was. But, like, it was just – I think I laughed, like, twice while editing that movie. And I think that, I laughed once on set, you know, one of those things. On Grace's Room, I remember we – despite all the frustration and stress, we laughed a lot on set. But during editing, it was like I noticed that I had to create a lot of the laughter through the edits. Not to say that the script wasn't funny, not to say the performances weren't funny, but like personally, because I had been so inundated in I had watched this happen in real time, I had written it, you know, I didn't have the impact anymore.
Yeah.
And so then like anytime I cut stuff together in like a really quick or quippy way, it was like, oh, okay, I remember this is why it's funny.
Yeah.
But with this, it's like just watching raw footage, I'm laughing.
Yeah.
I'm laughing every scene. And I'm so happy about that because it's like I get to enjoy the experience now. Whereas before it not to say that it felt like only work, it's an easier process when you're enjoying yourself as you're doing it.
And that's what I think it should be. You should be able to be watching the film that you've shot and enjoying it and being excited by what you've created. I can't imagine there's no, you know, very few things as abysmal and awful feeling as sitting down with something you're creating and being so unhappy with it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so to be able to sit there and be like, oh, this is coming together. Oh, this is better than I thought. I mean, there's, I don't know if I even mentioned it to you or if I was just thinking about it to myself, but there's some raw footage you showed the last time I was here of a certain character, you know, going to pieces, so to speak. And there was...
Which, hold on, which,
you know, I don't want to say it out of the microphone.
Okay.
And the way it was shot, there's like, it's almost like there's a little bit of sadness in it. And
Oh, sure.
Which I didn't expect. And yeah. I don't even know if that was supposed to be there, but the performances coupled with just the way it's shot, I was like, you know, there's wow, I got really excited. I was like, that's a little angle I didn't even expect.
And yeah, there's some brevity to it.
There's some emotion in that scene that's silly as hell that I don't think was written with emotion necessarily, but the way the performers did it and the way the shot was and the reflection, and it's just, wow. And so it's those little discoveries. So as you edit it, it should have moments of like, whoa, that's even better than I expected. And,
yeah,
you know, and you should be, this is, I think this is the way it should be now. It shouldn't be something you're like looking at through, you know, peeking through your fingers and being like, oh God, how bad is this sequence going to be? And this, you know, this is what creation in a perfect world. This is what creating things should feel like. It should be like everything you do is even better than the day before, and you're so excited, and you can't wait to show people. And
oh yeah, well,
you know, and so this is the way I think it should be.
I never had rough edit for River City Panic and Grace's Room. Rough edits weren't really done until like December, and this will be done like a full 2 months ahead of time. You know, and this is even with like a pickup shot. So it's like we got done slightly a month earlier than we usually would, but we had to go back and do stuff.
Yeah, and you shot quite a bit. That was a pretty
three full days.
A lot of stuff in that pickup weekend. Very important stuff. So
and so putting that all together, it's like I can't wait. I work a 9-to-5, and on the weekends I'm running around shooting shit for other stuff all the time.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, but it's like my heart's here. It's at my desk working on this thing because it's like. And it's because I want people to know who Joe Buckley is.
Yeah,
you know.
They're going to.
And I want people to see, you know, Drag and the Underlings, you know, and all that stuff. And I just think it's gonna be the screening with the family and friends before we release it in the theater. That's what I'm most excited for. I couldn't care, not to say that I couldn't, I could care, but I couldn't care less about the next day when we actually show it to the public for the first time, that Friday night at 7:00.
Yeah.
I just want to see it with all you guys.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. That'll be the one I'm most excited about too, because to see it with everybody that worked on it, and, you know, so everybody has a vested interest in it. Even if you just did a little thing, like even with Grace's Room, I was on that thing for technically 2 nights, but I only shot on one night. And, you know, by the time I saw Grace's Room in the theater, we would already start with Ill, so I was more involved in stuff. But even watching Grace's Room, and I did that tiny little bit, I was proud to be involved in it. And it was knowing that everybody around me worked on the movie for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, some people brought friends and whatnot, but so everybody was watching the movie with an anticipation of like, okay, here's this thing we all worked on. We either small or big, but we all had a hand in what's about to unfurl on the screen. And that feeling of pride is going to be different than the feeling of a brand new audience loving the movie, but an audience loving the movie that also had a hand in it. And you feel that swell of pride and everybody looking at each other. That was great, Joe. You see a cool shot. You look back at Zach and be like, dude, that was fucking awesome. You know, that's a different kind of excitement.
I feel like every time. So I've done this like with a bunch of people. We go through the movie of all Joe's scenes, every moment he's in the film, and just, I'm like 100% certain that every time we see him, the laughs will get bigger and bigger and bigger. Even if the joke isn't as good as the first one, it's just, the laughs will just get bigger because they'll just fall in love with that character.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe that. And as much as I know that we sometimes forget about him, not Joe, but Neil, I'm really hoping that Neil gets some moments to shine, because it's like the little things that we actually do. There's only one scene that I'm a little disappointed in that we didn't get to do a little couple goofs with him in the bowling alley. We didn't have Nick that day, and I didn't think to go back and try and get some stuff during the pickup weekend. And you know, it's never too late.
That's true. Those are inside. We know the place.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, you could always go in and
get
if you really wanted to. So,
but I think that Neil will steal some shots, and I look forward to seeing how he fleshes out, you know. And I don't know, just overall, just really overall, I think that every character really has a moment, from the lowliest person, you know, the lowliest underling, you know. I don't want to give it away.
No.
But there's you know, there's a couple characters who show up and they get dispatched of fairly quickly.
Yeah.
But I think that they get their moment.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a pretty wonderful thing right now, and it's cool right now to be on the cusp of it, you know, in this weird position where it's coming together, and it's coming together in a good way, but it's not done yet. But it's that weird anticipation.
Like you know
something around the corner is awesome. Mm-hmm. And you just can't wait for it. It was same with the trailer. When you had finally sent, as Tyler was editing the trailer, he was sending various people little bits and pieces as he was going along and getting input, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And even before that, and then when there was the final cut of the trailer, you know, we all had seen it a couple of days before. So it was that fun anticipation knowing that the trailer was coming out and that it was really good. And it was a nice little moment of anticipation before it came out.
Oh, yeah. Well,
just knowing how fun it was and how good it was and being like, oh, it's going to come out tomorrow. People are going
to
dig it.
I was talking with Mike on the phone because I was just going to drop it. I was just ready to drop it because that's just what I do.
Yeah.
I edit it and I want instant gratification like the Joe promos. That's the best feeling.
Those are fun, though, because you come home from doing something and you turn on your computer and like, oh, there's a new Joe Buck. Video, yes, and they're always fantastic. So
we like, I'll call Joe over, we'll edit it like a promo for an event or something like that, or to help somebody out, and then edit it.
Yeah, it's pretty much done in like a day.
Yeah, we'll shoot it, edit it in like 3 to 4 hours, and just throw it online, and you get that instant gratification. Well, I was talking to Mike, and I just mentioned that, you know, I was going to drop it like the next day, and he's like, "No, you do not do that." And he could hear my voice just drop,
what?
And I was like all disappointed. He's like, I know you hate me right now. He's like, but you can't. You just can't, because you need to give it time to get attention.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've never done that before, really, you know, other than maybe being like, oh, hey, trailer's going to drop tomorrow. Get ready. You know, and then you don't say anything else. Or it's like, hey, trailer's next week.
Yeah.
See you then.
Yeah.
But then Mike's like, put something every day.
Yeah.
And every day. Absolutely. I think the first day I just did a picture. And then 4 days after that, or for the next 4 days after that, I did a little video.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fucking work. Yeah. And by the last day of like a preview video, I was fucking pissed and burnt out. I was I was like angry editing. So I was like, I'm done with this. I want to go to fucking bed. It's 8 p.m. Why am I posting a video now for something that's getting released tomorrow?
Understandable.
And then the next day, I post the video and it's like 1,000 views, 2,000 views, 5,000 views.
Nuts.
And the next day, I wake up, 10,000 views.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is fucking awesome.
And a lot of that had to do with the building every day.
It really did.
And what's funny, though, is it's not like those promo videos stopped getting views after the trailer.
No.
The trailer brought people to promo. The promo views kept going up higher and higher.
They did, actually.
They were hitting like 2,000, you know. The promo videos hit like, one of them hit over like 2,000. I'm like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, the one about the characters, yeah, like the little character introductions was 2,100 views.
Yeah.
You know, the one with you and Sean was 1.4. The day before that, it was a little Joe Buckley intro, 1.2.
Yeah.
You know, it like...
So it all of this stuff. And it's still there for posterity. So other people that come across the Hometown Hero, there's plenty of content on the Hometown Hero.
Well, and these things are... It's not like it's pertaining to the release of the trailer. It's just fun stuff from the movie.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing is like, I'll like a lot of things that people that... you know, I either have done a little film with or kind of know tentatively, they'll say, ask me to like some movie project, and I will, show support, whatever. But it's then I forget I liked it because they don't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, then there'll be 6 months of silence, and then, oh, by the way, here's a picture of a movie. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot I liked that. I forgot all about it. So I like the idea that if you go to the Hometown Hero Facebook page, if you're listening to this and somehow I haven't liked it, go and like it.
Yeah.
There's plenty of fun content on the page.
Yeah.
There's like 7 or 8, 9, 10 videos right now of just fun shit to watch. So.
Oh, yeah.
There's going to be more. So
trying to post something like every four or 5 days.
Yeah.
And it's not for the sake of stay here. We like you. Yeah. We like you. Look at this stuff. It's like... They're really – Butcher the Bakers is brimming to the surface and overflowing with additional stuff. So anything that you see in here, like on Facebook, it's all B-roll. It's all all mistakes. It's all alternate takes and stuff like that. So you're not missing anything. Or you're not like – it's not like you're going to – you don't see the movie before you see it.
Yeah. There's a guy at work that asked me after he saw the trailer. He's like, oh, you guys gave a lot of the movie away. I was like, no.
You have no idea.
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all. I laughed because I started thinking about all the stuff that's in this movie. That I'm like, dude,
yeah,
that's nothing. You saw nothing yet.
Yeah.
You've got a taste at best. There is so much ridiculous. You barely saw any of the monsters, any of the beasts. You saw them for a second. Yeah. There's so many more beasts in it, and there's so many more. Just the Joe stuff alone is reams worth of stuff. Yeah, that trailer really showed nothing of Joe.
And I was worried as I was starting to compile stuff. I was worried about the level of action. Oh my gosh, they really for what the stakes are, it doesn't seem like much. But then I was like, well, there's your encounter with Drag.
Mm-hmm.
There's the opening sequence, which flows in the opening credits, which is gonna be fairly heavy handed. Boop and goop. there's your introduction to the first underling, mm-hmm. which is a fairly lengthy and hilarious sequence. I can't wait to show you guys that. Mm. It's that one.
God, I can't wait.
Because that's it ties very in closely with Joe's birth and all the characters coming together. There's all you guys downtown in that huge fight.
Yeah.
That alone is fucking massive. There's the stuff at the roller rink.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that stuff.
Yeah, Sam's demise is great.
Nice.
And then there's the ending, which is just fucking chock full of shit. So there's I think by the end of it, there'll be the equivalent of probably 20 to 25 minutes of not necessarily like punches getting thrown every 2 seconds, but amped up action. Things are happening. And it's like, I was like, you know what? I'm really happy with that. That's almost a third of the film where it's like, you're really moving with it. So I don't know, man. I feel like a fucking asshole because I can't stop talking about how great I think this movie is.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with that because nobody else is going to do it for us. You know what I'm saying?
That's very true.
You know what I'm saying? There has been some love since the trailer. Quite a bit of love, and that's very gratifying.
I appreciate that, yeah.
Very gratifying. A lot of people have changed their tune on certain things, and a lot of people are now more interested in being in the quote-unquote next one.
Yeah.
Hey, when are you guys making the next one? When are you doing the next one? I'm like, well,
307 shares.
Yeah. So what I mean, so that's been fantastic. But at the same time,
42,300 people reached.
Oh, yeah, because this is your pay, so you can see all that stuff. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, no, we don't even pay for this.
Yeah. What I mean is you, I can't see those kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, because page admin. Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, like you can, what I thought you were saying is that like you can pay to get like your post boosted on Facebook or whatever.
Oh, it's kind of worthless.
Oh, well, I didn't even know that.
It's actually not worthless, Joe, because what they do is they don't show your shit to everybody, so that's how you get it to everybody.
No, I know that, but I heard that like the page boosting stuff is it mostly just goes out to people who won't care later. So
I'm trying to tell you to put the mic close to your mouth.
Oh,
yeah.
So like, you'll pay to get these people to look at it once, but then they won't look at your stuff again. So it was
typically not to defend Facebook or the way it works, but there has been quite a few times
changes
where Kyle's used it, or we've done it a few times, where you, at the very least, you'll get a bunch of likes from it. So people who are like somewhat paying attention, but anyways, like we couldn't even after like the first 2 hours, we couldn't even boost our post. We couldn't put money into it because it's reaching too many people. It's like there's no point.
That's so.
So like, that was pretty cool. It was like, when I saw that it said boost unavailable. I was like we didn't even need it. Like
that's fucking nice.
It was like the content was worth what the people were saying, and that made me feel so good.
Yeah, that night, it was the night with the 19th that you put it out. I remember I didn't because I don't have a smartphone, so if I'm on Facebook, I'm on a computer,
mm-hmm.
and I sat with my laptop pretty much the entire night,
just refreshing.
At first I wasn't going to. I'm like, oh, look at it. They're getting a lot of views. And then I did. I remember I went and I jogged. I took a shower. I came back with some food, and I was like, holy shit, it's gone up like 2,000 or 3,000 in that hour and a half that I've been gone, and then I just couldn't turn away.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just kept watching, and I was like, oh my God, because I've not been in something, and I'm a big YouTube guy. I watch a lot of videos, and I always see these guys getting 20, 30, 60,000 views on things, and I'm like, man, that's got to feel cool to put something out and know that like 5,000 people just watched it.
Yeah.
You know? And so to be part of something that night that was like, oh, and then we're all in a private chat together talking about, oh, I just shared it with this page and let's see how many views it gets. And it was like this little party, online party of and the gratification of something you've worked on and something you've been talking about. And all of a sudden it's kind of, you're giving it a little bit to the world and let's see a little taste. And the world's like,
All right.
Dig it. Yeah. Cool. When's the next? When can we see more? And that's a good feeling, especially when you've spent so many years toiling on things that nobody sees. That's
Well, after the rough cut is done, what I'll do is the rough cut should be done like the first week of November. I want to have picture lock by the end of November. So Thanksgiving weekend, I get like a 4 or 5 day weekend. That's my weekend to really go through and just sheen this thing over. That way I can give maximum amount of time to Billy to do the audio mixing and the music and, you know, so I can sit down. Well, unfortunately, Brian's moving away, but, you know, sit down at my in Illinois, and Brian can sit down in Indiana. We can work together on all the animation and stuff and just try and make this thing as fucking beautiful as possible.
Yeah.
It'll have at least an additional 2 months of post-production beyond the picture lock than any other movies ever had. Usually it was picture lock and, okay, we've got 5 weeks to get everything else done. And, like, it was just not enough time. So I think this is we're really going hard on this, and I'm just so fucking.
And you've and you have a hungry team behind you that want people to see this, and I'll do.
Oh, I thought you were going to say want nuggets.
Well, with Joe is could be called
you're
a team,
that guy, Joe. Yeah.
But there's a group of people. Not to say that there wasn't, I don't know, in Grace Room, but there I know on this movie there's a group of people involved that are adamant about getting it seen and hungry for people to see it and proud as hell of it and. Won't shut up about it to a lot of people, they're being told.
Yeah.
I don't know who that could be. Hint, hint me. Mm-hmm. But I've said the word butcher and bakers more in the last month than I have in my entire life.
Yeah.
Those two words together. But, yeah, and I'm going to, you know, do everything in my power to the point of being annoying if I must be, and so what, to get this thing seen and get it out there and get people paying attention. And I've been scrolling down and researching different little festivals as well. You know, there's one in Ohio that I think it does. They just wrapped up, so you know,
next year
it'd be next year, of course. But it was their first year, and they seem to be pretty successful. And I've been following it for a while, following the guy who made it, and that's one that I think they take features and shorts.
Yeah.
So and it's in I want to say it's in Cleveland actually.
Hmm.
I think
it's Ohio.
We'll,
so
I think
it's a
we'll
Midwest
do fairly
thing.
Well as far as admissions. I think that maybe we'll get accepted to quite a few.
I don't expect
anything beyond that. You know, I just want people to see Butcher the Bakers because I think it's worth seeing.
Yeah, I want expand the audience and then expand the kind of army. You know, I think it's time for the other indie filmmakers of America to kind of know who Hometown Hero is.
Yeah,
you know.
In terms of like those like basically horror movie only independent
that's what
festivals,
these that's the ones I've been
I think
looking
we could
at.
Get in like almost any of them because I think this movie's better than most of those submission movies.
Well, you know what I think it has definitely has going for it in the realm of horror is it has a very good sense of humor.
Yes.
I know just from the script it has a self-awareness. It knows what it is.
Yeah.
It's not self-important. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's not ripping anything off. It's not trying to be a grindhouse movie. It's not trying to be. It's a unique.
It's
weird,
not about like a haunting.
Yeah, it's a weird because the Joe Buckley character alone. That's not a ripoff of anything or an homage to anything. That's
no.
a weird ass fucking thing that came out of a real person. So no other movie's got a character like Joe Buckley. And I think, you know, maybe some horror festivals may love it and be like, oh, it's a little too much comedy. But I think, having said that, side note, I think we could also submit this to some comedy festivals.
Yeah. Well, even at the very
least, too.
I would love to just get in on the sense that, like, it's even if I wasn't in the running, it would be a good, you know, to go to a horror. River City Panic made it into one festival, and that's not technically true because we ran one and we put it in it. But we got into one.
Oh, we won.
And we did. Yeah.
Best first feature.
Best
director.
Down in Decatur, and it was a lot of horror stuff, and it was just like, I fucking was like, we were there for hours before they watched ours, and I was so fucking sick of it because it was just like, I can only take so much horror in one sitting.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't love horror, it's just that like, there's a certain edge to horror that works when you're really amped up about a feature.
Yeah.
And so it's like when you're sitting there and you're just like, yeah, what's the next slash you're going to do? What's the next bet?
Yeah.
So it's like throwing something like Butcher the Bakers into that mix, I think it would be a really good way to get people juiced. You
and
know,
I,
just give them some diversity.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think aiming for those types of festivals because it's fun. It's yeah. just a fun movie.
Yeah, and watching and watch and liking these festivals and watching the submission process and watching other filmmakers say tag it and say, hey, we got our movie in there, and it's exciting. It's just that because I understand their excitement because they're like, they worked hard on a movie just like us and toiled on it, and now yeah. they're like, hey, we're going to show it to an audience that doesn't know shit about us. They're not yeah. our friends. They're not from our area. They're not from our hometown. They have no reason to like us except for if they like the movie or not. And there's an excitement in that. It's like, okay, it's like, you know, you've been training for the Olympics and everybody, you've beat everyone in your hometown. You've beat everybody, but now you're going, do you got the chops? You know yeah. what I mean? And at the very least, I think if we submit and we get accepted, which in and of itself is a victory, but, because this place doesn't accept everybody, but just to be able to do that and to be go and stand around with you, a bunch of other like-minded people from different areas that also worked on a movie and, you know, be able to stroke each other's dicks and say, oh, your movie was great. And also was yours. And, you know, I think that's almost like a victory lap.
We're going to break our arms jerking each other off.
Yeah. And it's okay. I think people like us and,
well,
and
that's deserve the moment it. To do it because
we put a lot of work into this stuff. So
very few moments where you're in a room with people who understand why, like, because that's the biggest question I ever get is why do you do this? Because it's like, you know, usually I'm saying something about like, oh, I'd love to go do that, but you know, I'm fucking this far in debt because of this movie, like, and I'm stressed out because I got to go spend, you know, 2 weeks straight in my underwear editing and throwing up on myself. Like, why would you do that? It's like, you just don't get it. Just don't ask the question. You don't get it.
Because those 2 weeks won't be forever, but the movie will last forever, and that movie will bring joy forever.
Yes.
You know, and that's what makes it worth it. It's you know, the famous phrase, pain is temporary, film is forever.
Yeah.
And it'll be better than the time you and the gals went and got margaritas and listen to Jimmy Buffett.
Exactly. Sometimes you have to sacrifice things, and it's for the greater good. And some people just don't understand it. They just don't have that, and that's fine. They just don't have that desire and that drive and in them that need, and that sickness, whatever you want to call it. They don't have it, so they'll never understand. So it's no sense arguing with them or trying to get them. It's just like, you know, it's just something we do. It's, you know, whether it's doing plays and giving up 4 weeknights for 3 months in a row, you know, to do these things. And you know, it's hard to explain why, but you get something out of it. That's all I can say. It does something for me. I get off on it. That's all I say. I can't explain why, but I get off on it. So
Joe.
But yeah, I mean, Joe Buck, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad I got to act in the movie.
I'm glad you did too. I'm very proud of you.
I'm glad you were able to get half naked.
Yeah.
I'm glad you manned
top
up.
Half
you,
naked.
And you've seen it. And do you see now what we were talking about? You see how funny that bit is? How fantastic it is? How many times I've watched that?
Everybody I shared Holy that with shit. Fucking lost their mind, Joe.
My nipples poking out like 3 inches.
I have tears in my eyes on that scene. I watched it over and over and
I'm still
over
watching
and over.
It.
Yeah.
It's so funny and gross. It's sick, but it's funny. You did well, Joe.
Oh, thank
you. I'm proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew
I'm
I would
proud
be.
Of myself.
I knew I'd be proud of you if you just had the confidence to man up and do it. And you did. And the world's your oyster, man. Wait till the audience sees it.
Payoff is big,
and
man.
I'm going to be sucking it down with rock salt.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, no. Like, I never thought I was going to, like, act in anything. Like, even as, like, a kid, like, whenever I said I wanted to do movies, it was like, I want to be a cameraman.
Yeah, well, you can like now. You're a triple threat. You're a cameraman. You're an actor, and you're a. Well, I guess you're a double threat.
Nah. Yeah, pretty much.
You have one more. You have one more hat you need to wear, and then you'll be the triple threat. You'll be the actor.
Well, the triple threat is he might kill you.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. That is true. There's always a physical threat coming from Joe Buck.
I guess I directed the documentary.
Well, there you go. You're a documentarian. Well, because that kind of goes along with.
Well, you got to finish it, Joe. So we'll see.
No, that's a thing. Yeah.
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 He came over the other day, and we shot a little promo, and then I was like, all right, I'm going to get to work on this. He's like, well, I was hoping to work on the documentary. I'm like, oh, okay, Joe. I'm like, well, here, the first thing you should do is you should go through, watch your footage, and take notes of everything so you know what you're looking for, so that way you're not just sifting through hours and hours of footage over and over again. Label your things and look through what – I was like, okay. I look away. 5 minutes later, I look back, and I can't even remember what you were fucking like. It was like you Google image searching for something weird. I don't think you did anything that day.
Well, I went back and watched some stuff, and I was like disappointed because I bootlegged Grace's Room in the theater.
I heard about it.
Yeah,
you were saying
the
that
entire
at the social
film.
Kitchen.
Rather than film people's reactions, he filmed the movie.
Dumb thing to do, Joe.
Yeah, well, the joke was I was going to like stick it on Pornhub or something like right before it came out and then like delete it. But, no, I never did that. So that was just pointless. And I didn't get the reaction of the director watching his film on the big screen for the first time.
Because then Tyler and Sean and Rachel and everybody that worked on the movie would now have their names forever in Google cachet.
Oh, yeah, in Pornhub.
Connected like, to Pornhub, being on Pornhub. So everybody would have appreciated that.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, I know you got to get going because you got a big practice night, don't you?
Yeah, I'm doing a play, and we're in the final stretch. We go up in... a week from Friday. So
yeah,
we got rehearsal tonight. We're taking pictures tonight, and then starting Sunday, it's just like boom, boom, boom every night. Rehearsal, 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 dress rehearsal, dress rehearsal, and then we
do the
thing.
You're gonna be busy.
Yeah. It's they call it Hell Week coming up.
Yeah,
because you got to get the tech down. You got to get the set moving down. You got to get your costume because we haven't done any of that stuff.
And plus the
Light comes. Guys come in. They figure out where the lights are, or the music cues, and we're doing something in this play where we got a projector behind us.
Yeah.
With images.
Well, the director normally like has like a pitchfork the entire week, and he's just poking you in the ass.
Sometimes it feels that way. Sometimes it feels that way. But, all right, fellas. Well, it's been a good podcast.
Yeah.
And,
it's good to be back.
Yeah, we're back in the saddle. So we'll talk to you later, Joe. I'm gonna let you throw it away.
Okay. This has been 99 Cent Movies, and we're watching you.